Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
You might have heard in the news today, Ireland will miss its climate targets unless deeper cuts to emissions are imposed between now and 2030. The Environmental Protection Agency predicts that even if all the planned cuts are implemented, we'll still fall far short of the legally binding 51% reduction in greenhouse gases. So what is this likely to mean for how we live now and in the future? Well, Sive O'Neill is coordinator of the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition. Sive, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
Were you surprised to hear this morning? Surprised at the scale of the undershoot, according to the Environmental Protection Agency?
I was surprised because last year the EPA found that the climate action plan then in place would deliver 28% emission reductions. And even though we have a much more detailed prescriptive climate action plan in place now since last December, they reckon that will only deliver 1% more emission reductions by 2030. So we're still way off the target set out in the climate law and the carbon budgets. So clearly a lot more is going to have to be done if we're going to meet those targets.
So what does that say about our climate strategy here?
Well, it says a number of things. For a start, there is always going to be a lag between policies and their implementation. And even when they're implemented, it's a lag again before you see the emission reductions. So that's inevitable. And that was why the Climate Change Advisory Council created a carbon budget for the first period that was a lot more flexible and generous than the second carbon budget. But notwithstanding that, the reality is that there's been very slow implementation of some key measures. And some of the policies and proposals are still incoherent and not actually driving emission reductions at all. For example, the growth in data centres is driving up electricity demand, which means we need more gas and coal on the electricity system to balance the grid. And we still have an expanding dairy herd. So as long as we have policies that are encouraging the growth of emissions, we're going to see these targets missed, no matter what policies and plans are in place otherwise.
So that's the incoherent part. It's the left hand and the right hand working at odds.
Exactly. So we have an implementation gap and we also have a kind of policy incoherence. Certainly in some of the sectors, the policies that are set out are clearly not ambitious enough. So the EPA have identified, for example, in agriculture, that if everything was implemented that they were able to model, you'd only see emission reductions between 4 and 20%. When in fact the target, the legally binding target, is a 25% reduction. But even within that, if you see emissions rising because of herd expansion, that puts those targets in doubt again. And there's growth in certain areas as well, sort of in industry, for example, the use of cement is expected to increase by 5%. And emissions from energy industries, even though we have a high rate of renewables penetrating the grid, if demand for electricity continues to grow too fast for the system to catch up, essentially we'll have more gas and coal to balance the grid, and that drives up emissions from that sector as well.
These are very tricky, difficult problems to deal with. What kind of direct policy changes do you think could be made more rapidly now?
Well, absolutely. I think we need to be a lot more honest with the public that that these targets are not just essential because they're legally binding, but they actually bring co-benefits. So we have to do more to bring people on board. I certainly think we need to be hitting the pause button for more data centres. It makes no sense to add more data centres when our grid isn't able to cope. We need to expand renewables much more rapidly. Now, there's a lot of modelling done on the targets that are already in place, but these are going to be in doubt unless we streamline the planning processes and ensure that An Bord Pleanála particularly is equipped with the skills and the resources it needs to process applications in a timely fashion. I think we should be rolling out an exit strategy for farmers who want to reduce or retire from dairy farming particularly, and really do everything possible to stop the growth in dairy herd emissions. The Department of Agriculture estimate that the beef suckler herd is going to decline all on its own, that that's kind of an inevitable, but that policy interventions are required to manage the emissions and environmental impacts on the dairy side. And then finally, I think we need to be really taking a hard look at the construction sector, because as long as we're building houses and more, you know, physical infrastructure with cement, we're going to see emissions rising from that because of the kind of process of making cement releases greenhouse gas emissions. So we need to shift over to more timber-based construction and reduce the embodied carbon in the new houses that we have to build.
We spoke about timber-built homes on the programme last week, and we learned that they are more expensive, particularly if you're building a one-off project. You're looking at increased costs of up to 15%. That's very difficult for people to take.
Well, I imagine that it's a question of scale. So once the skills are there in the construction sector to rely on timber as a default type of building material, that the costs will come down or at least balance out with what they're used to. A lot of it is just based on what builders are used to working with. And when those skills are there, and when we have access to Irish timber as well, which is another issue, the costs should come down.
Mm. Again, you know, going back to the fact that these are really difficult and tricky problems. I mean, those three options that you've outlined there, pausing data centres is probably the most doable of them all. That's a stroke of a pen. But the exit strategy for farmers, you know how difficult that whole debate around farming, around reducing the herd, has become. We've got urban versus rural, calls for a new political party and so on. That is becoming increasingly tense, that debate, isn't it?
It has, but I find the debate is so often a bit skewed. Like, for example, the farming organisations have repeatedly called for measures that are voluntary, that they be fully compensated, and that there is provision made for the entry of new, younger farmers into the system. Now, the Department of Agriculture's paper, which I haven't read, I've just read newspaper reports about it, which was, you know, a kind of draft proposal for an exit scheme, did all of those things. It proposed an entirely voluntary scheme. The levels of compensation were, according to my sources, quite generous and would incentivize some farmers to retire on that basis. And it would create the opportunity for younger farmers to get into dairying by creating a little bit of kind of redundancy in the system there and scope for them to get in. So in all three areas, it ticked the boxes. So I do not understand why there is more controversy about this. This is a welcome initiative, and it is going to have to be rolled out, frankly, because if we do not address our agricultural emissions, we are not going to get to grips with water pollution, biodiversity loss and greenhouse gas emissions. It makes up over a third of our national greenhouse gas emissions, and its environmental impact is just getting very serious now on a number of different fronts. So urgent action is required. And this does not mean the end of family farming. It doesn't mean the end of livestock farming. It just means that we put a limit on the amount of pollution we're willing to tolerate, because it's unacceptable.
Okay, and we're going to be talking about this in more detail later on in the gathering, including the controversy around the Nature Restoration Plan, which has been causing a lot of debate and discussion. We had Oisín Smith here from the Green Party yesterday reacting to the decision of the EPP, that's the group that includes Fine Gael, walking away from the negotiations in the EU. So more conversation about that later. But just going back to what we started the programme on today, we were talking, Saib, about all of the people who are heading off, flying away on their holidays over the course of the weekend. 500,000 people going through Dublin Airport this weekend. How real is behavioural change when it comes to climate change, and when you see that people are still in their droves opting to take flights for leisure?
Well, that interestingly, aviation emissions are not even included in the EPA report today, because aviation emissions are kind of treated as international bunker fuels and they're not part of the climate action plan. But we are going to have to address aviation emissions, and they're not currently in the carbon budgets, but they should be. And that also means thinking about connectivity with other countries. It means thinking about our tourism strategy. And, you know, the reality is it's very difficult to get out of Ireland by sail and rail. The connections are not brilliant. It's slow and it's often more expensive than flying. So we have to ensure that aviation pays its way. So at the moment, it's cheaper to fly because aviation doesn't have the same kind of carbon taxes and fuel taxes that other forms of transport have. So the first thing I would say is we should be looking at removing these implicit fossil fuel subsidies by taxing aviation fuel. And we should be looking at aviation in terms of our overall climate strategy and not leaving it to one side. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is we need to be thinking about our ability to get to the airport as well, because, you know, the reality is until Metrolink is built, we have very poor public transport access to the airport. And that is a climate issue as well, that we have to roll out these big public transport infrastructure projects without any further delay, because they're absolutely critical pieces of infrastructure. And we cannot expect emissions to drop from the road transport side until better public transport is in place. And that includes, you know, sail and rail as well.
Sive, thank you very much. Sive O'Neill, coordinator of the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition.